Go ahead and get started. Can you hear in the back? Yeah? All right. All right, so we're here to talk about setting up your developer environment in Office 365. I do want to take a minute and kind of explain the two tracks that we have here. I know we had a very packed room in the last session, and there was only a couple folks in the link session, generally, the way we're doing it is track one is kind of the getting started, and maybe if you've been doing development against SharePoint or Office already, this is probably a track that helps you understand that move to the app model. We do touch a little bit on the Office 365 APIs, but if you want to go deep on the Office 365 APIs, that's going to be in the other track. So just kind of set some expectation there. All right, so my name is Steve Walker. I'm on the Office 365 Customer Advisory Team. I'm actually an ex-MCS field guy. Worked with some of our largest customers the last two or three years. Were mainly global deployments. And then I moved to the engineering team about 4 years ago. And so I've been, I guess you could say, the voice of the customer to the engineers and help them understand why or why not they should do things and advocate for our customers. Over the last 6 months or so, I've shifted. I'm a dev guy. I used to twist and bend SharePoint in lots of different ways. And so I have expanded beyond just SharePoint. And now I'm actually the cat who owns developer extensibility across the server suite and the client suite. The way I like to put it is, if everybody did what they were supposed to do, I wouldn't have a job. So I spend a lot of time hearing from the field and telling the engineers, hey, this is what we need to do, and this is why. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, that's my handle, at SharePointing. Anyway, so here's the agenda. We'll have an overview, kind of the basic intros, and then we'll talk about the Office 365 environment. We'll show you how to sign up for one, how to set one up. We'll talk about the Windows Azure environment. I'm going to play a little ad hoc as we go through the Azure stuff and help you understand how you can use on-prem IIS or, you know, some other options there if you'd like. And then we'll talk a little bit about the seller dashboard. So first, for the overview, this is getting recycled quite a lot. You saw it in the keynote, and you saw it in the last session if you were here. I won't spend a ton of time on it. You'll see me spending less and less time on it as we go through these sessions in the next 2 days. But we have what we consider contextual apps. That's where we surface the applications into either Office or SharePoint. You know, put the app where the users are doing their work. We have a robust set of Office 365 APIs. So if you have an external app, you're building a client application, you're building something for Windows, you're building something for Android, for iOS, then the Office 365 APIs are going to be how you're going to interact with that. Definitely have a lot of power and a lot of promise there. We also believe in flexible tooling. You know, we think Azure is awesome and great, but if you want to use, you know, IIS or some other web hosting platform of your choice, you can totally do that. So when you hear us say Azure, you hear us say cloud, there's a lot of these things that you can do on-prem. You know, you can use Visual Studio. Access is actually a nice tool if you haven't played with it and you don't have the stigma that goes along with Access. And then it's all built on HTML5, CSS, JavaScript. So when we talk about an Office 365 environment, what we mean is actually the entire Office 365 suite. So that's the Office clients, that's Exchange, that's SharePoint, that's OneDrive for Business, and Azure Active Directory. So when we say that you can set this all up on-prem, you can. It is a lot easier to use AAD and access control services because we take care of a lot of that plumbing for you. So even if maybe you have constraints that keep you from developing or deploying your apps for your company into the public cloud, then, you know, an option might be to do some development here just with your code and then deploy it into your on-prem environment. So you can mix and match, and we'll talk about that a little bit in the end. So what is Azure Active Directory? This is our identity and access management for the cloud. It is not an instance of Active Directory running in the cloud, it is a different thing, even though we call them both Active Directory. You can create new directories or manage existing ones in an Azure subscription. So an Azure subscription can have multiple directories associated with it, which is kind of interesting. This is what Office 365 uses for authentication. So by default, if you don't set up DirSync, you don't set up any of the connections to an on-prem Active Directory, we still use Azure Active Directory behind the scenes. So if you get a on-microsoft.com account, that's actually an Azure Active Directory account that we create for in the cloud. So this is used by Azure for user authentication and for application authorization. All right. So when we look at our development options, we've got a nice little matrix here. So when I think about apps for SharePoint, I'm wanting to do a contextual app that I want to surface for my users. And that says cloud hosted. It should say provider hosted, sorry. I really have two options. I have SharePoint hosted app, which means everything is going to be hosted in SharePoint. I don't need an external website, an external something to process on. That's what we consider SharePoint hosted. The scenario for that is really, I just want to interact with the APIs that SharePoint provides me, but create maybe a custom user experience, okay? And then we have, it says cloud hosted here, we've actually, I should change that, it's provider hosted app, okay? What that means is I actually have a provider running somewhere, whether that's on an Azure website or in an IIS website on-prem, that provides application logic, gives me a place to run my custom code aside from just interacting with SharePoint through the API surface that we have. One thing that people may notice that is not on here that used to be on here was auto-hosted. That is gone. We do not allow you to create auto-hosted apps anymore. If anybody wants to throw rocks at me about that, come to Ask the Experts tonight. We can have that conversation later. So, when I'm building apps for Office, I can build task pane apps and content apps, both in Word and Excel. And we should have PowerPoint on that list now for content apps, so that's been recently added. I should update this slide deck. But if I'm building mail apps, obviously that's Outlook, okay? And then through the Office 365 APIs, I can get access to mail, calendar, and contacts on the Exchange side. I can also get access to files and sites on the SharePoint side. And then on the OneDrive for Business side, I can get access to files. Okay? So just to set some context to the acronyms that we're going to be using, when we look at a Windows Azure environment, that includes a few different things. A couple of them are core. The Azure Active Directory, like we said before, that's our directory service for the cloud. And then Azure Access Control Services, or ACS, you'll see that acronym used a lot. That's how we actually do application registration and authorization. So you think of Azure Active Directory as the users and the groups, and ACS as the apps and the service principals. And then we have Azure Websites. So Azure Access Control Services. So again, identity and access management for the cloud. It's more generic than Azure Active Directory. I can create new namespaces in an Azure subscription. So this is something that you could do even without Office 365. You may want to look to use Azure Active or ACS to secure and authorize your applications. But we use it for Office 365 for application authorization. And so we do a lot of that plumbing behind the scenes, and we make that pretty simple for you to register your apps with ACS, AAD and ACS through our Visual Studio tooling or manually through the portal. So when we talk about Azure websites, this is a screenshot of what it looks like when you go into the Azure portal. I select compute, website, I can do quick create, I can create a website. It's that easy to spin up another one. So it's analogous to creating a new IIS website in your IIS server. Okay. But you didn't have to go talk to the IT pro admins and get them to stand up a server and, you know, all that good stuff. So Office 365 and Azure together. So interesting thing, Office 365 users can be managed in Azure. And Office 365 users can be Azure administrators. So because we use that same Azure Active Directory directory between the two, you can set that up. You can have users in your business that are defined in Office 365 and created in Office 365, but then you can go in and make them administrators in Azure for certain subscriptions if you'd like. So, when we look at hosting options, so where am I going to host my app? For apps for SharePoint, again, I need a website if I'm going to do a cloud-hosted app or provider-hosted app, which is what we should rename this to. All I need for a SharePoint-hosted app is an Office 365 site. And when I say that, you can also use an on-prem SharePoint if you set up all the STS stuff. So that's an option. So if you just need to create a custom presentation and all it does is talk to services, then all you need is the Office 365 site and your client machine for Visual Studio. That's it. Apps for Office, I can do, again, task pane apps, content apps, and mail apps. For all three of those, I do need a website somewhere. Now, that could be an on-prem IIS server sitting inside my environment. That could be an Azure website. But I have to have somewhere to host the files that I'm actually going to serve to the app for Office. And if I'm doing Office 365 APIs, I have to have a web application somewhere that's running, or I have to have a Windows 8.1 app. And then recently we've added Android and iOS SDKs as well. So all you need is actually the client-side development environment, and then you're going to interact with Office 365 APIs from that client-side environment. So when you're wanting to do apps for SharePoint and you want to set up a dev environment, one of the first things you're going to want to do is get a Office 365 developer site collection. If you have MSDN, so Microsoft Developer Network, if you have one of those subscriptions, maybe your company provides that for you, you can get what's called an Office 365 developer tenant as part of that MSDN subscription. So it's part of your benefits. I'll show you the web page here in a minute and show you how you can walk through and actually claim that benefit. And then that gives you as a developer a single license developer site, a developer tenant to actually develop against. Where would I use a site collection versus a tenant? Because you can actually create developer site collections inside of an existing tenant. So if you just have an E3 tenant or whatever, I can go create a new site collection that's a developer site collection. If the app that I'm building, maybe it's a SharePoint hosted app, and it's only going to be hosted in one site collection, it's only going to talk to the client API or the server-side APIs for a single site collection, then that's all I need. I don't need an entire developer tenant if I'm only doing development against one site collection. Or if I'm doing an app that maybe it's going to be deployed to 1,000 site collections, but it's only accessing resources at the site collection level, then I'm okay with just having a developer site collection. If you're going to build apps that need to talk to tenant-level services, so things that are above the site collection, so maybe you need to talk to the user profile store, maybe you need to talk to admin APIs, things of that nature that require tenant-level access, then you're going to be looking to get a developer site collection, or a developer tenant, sorry. So developer tenant, developer site collection. Developer tenant, again, is restricted to maybe like one user license, so it's very restricted, but makes it really easy to do development, and you can develop against it at the tenant level. Developer site collection, if I'm only doing site collection scoped development. You're also going to want a Windows Azure subscription, if not just to manage the Azure Active Directory, but also to use Azure websites if you are interested in that. And then you'll need Visual Studio 2013. And the Office Developer Tools for Visual Studio 2013. So if I'm doing apps for Office, the dev environment, I need Office 365 Office and Exchange. SharePoint not necessarily required here. I'm still going to need that Windows Azure subscription, if only for the Azure Active Directory. And then Visual Studio 2013, the Office Developer Tools. So same as I did for SharePoint. If I install those developer tools once, I get both the SharePoint development tools and the Office Developer Tools. So if I'm doing development using the Office 365 APIs, this is what my dev environment would look like. I would have an Office 365 Office and Exchange. If I'm using Files API, I'm going to need SharePoint as well. I'm going to need a Windows Azure subscription or other infrastructure. So again, I can host this in an IIS site somewhere. I can host it in a Java WebSphere server, in a Python, Ruby, Rails, whatever the hosting environment of your choice, you can do that. You're going to want Windows 8.1, so there's some stuff that we did on the development side. If you're doing Windows client development, you're going to want 8.1. 8.0 has some issues. You're going to want Visual Studio 2013 or another IDE. So we've got developers that can use Eclipse and other things. You know, obviously we think Visual Studio is great, but if you're doing Java development, you're using Eclipse, you can actually do that as well. And then you're going to want the Office 365 API tools, and I'll show you how we do that in Visual Studio, but then I'll also show you where you can go find the other SDKs, the other client libraries for other platforms. So the basic workflow for setting up an environment: I'm going to sign up for an Office 365 subscription. If I do not already have one, I will create a developer site collection so that I can actually do my development against that developer site. I'm going to sign up for a Windows Azure subscription, and then after I sign up for that Windows Azure subscription, I'm going to link my Office 365 Azure Active Directory to my Windows Azure subscription, and then I can make an Office 365 user and administrator in Windows Azure. So once you've set up the directory integration between the two, so you've added the directory from your Office 365 account to Windows Azure, then you can go in and make those users from Office 365 an administrator in Azure. And then after I've done all that, I can use Visual Studio to remotely develop. So no need to host virtual machines on your environment unless you are like this guy. And but he still does a lot of on-prem development still. I've left most of that behind. So one of the really great resources is the Office Dev Center. So we've got a lot of content, samples, documentation, and we actually have a nice little link that shows you how to sign up for an Office developer site. I'm actually going to break out and show you what that page looks like, just so you can kind of see. It's actually right here. It's a nice little step-by-step. So these decks are in Yammer. You don't need to write that URL down. You can actually get into Yammer and find that link and click on it. But it walks you through real nice and easy what to do to start with an Office developer site, how to sign up for a developer site. Again, it has a link. If you're an MSDN subscriber, you can click here, log into your MSDN, and then just say you want to claim your developer benefit, Office 365 developer benefit, and then it'll provision a developer tenant for you. If you've gone, you don't even have to do that. If you just want to go sign up for a trial for Office 365, all of this stuff works. You can just sign up for an E3 trial or whatever SKU that you like. And then after that, you can create a developer site collection. Okay. And I'll actually walk you through what that looks like here in just a second. And as a matter of fact, why don't I just show you that? So first I'll try to do this live and see what this looks like. I am going to do it from Russia, because if I do it from the United States, it'll block me. It's T-U. Yeah, hold on. Russia. My first name is Steve. So this is what it looks like when you're actually going to sign up for a trial account. Let me just put my email in here. And I work for Microsoft. You'd figure they'd give these to us for free, but they don't. Anyway. I click Next. It's going to ask me to create an ID. Come on. Waiting. Is the network still working? Yeah. Oh, come on.
Okay, let's start on-prem development.
Let's try on-prem development, yeah. This really did work from the hotel last night. All right. I'll tell you what I'm going to do, is I'm actually going to clear my cookies and just log into one I've got.
Internet Explorer.
try Internet Explorer? Yeah, let's try Internet Explorer. How about we do that? So if we go to office.com, Office Online, and I'm just navigating to from office.com. You can see we give you a nice little matrix of what I can sign up for. I want for business, home, personal, office. Oh, for business, sorry. I was on the home one. I know that's confusing. Click on See Plans and Pricing. And then if I scroll down to the bottom, I'm going to say free trial. So you notice we only give you a free trial option for Office 365 Business and Office 365 Business Premium. I'm just going to sign up for the one for business. And let's give this a go. Maybe this does play nice with IE. And Steve Walker, stwalk@microsoft.com. Next. Ah, that worked a whole lot better, didn't it? And actually, I think I had left that page on in the background in my laptop so long that it probably timed out, is probably what happened. I probably could have refreshed it in Firefox as well. My username is going to be Steve. I'm going to call this Moscow Summit. I'm going to create a password. And let's do this one so I'll remember it. Next. And then I have to prove that I'm not a robot. Gee, I hope this works. And you say, text me. It'll actually send you a text message. You'll get a verification code. Let's turn on my Wi-Fi. Let's see if that comes through here in a second. So that's basically it. You put in the verification code that you get from the text message, and then it'll take you to the provisioning screen for Office 365. That's how easy it is to get an Office 365 account. I'm not going to wait for this thing to bounce that text message around forever. So, all right. So what I am going to do is I'm actually going to log into one that I already have. For those of you who wonder, why is he using multiple browsers? And why is he using that Firefox browser? What's that?
We do not want it.
You do not want it? I actually work with lots of different tenancies. So I have our Microsoft tenant internally. I have dog food tenant that I work because I work in office division. I have developer tenancies that I do these presentations on. Quite often, the cookies conflict. So like if I click on something, it'll try to open an IE and it'll say, oh, but you're logged in with your Microsoft account. So the way that I work around that is I actually use multiple browsers, one browser for each one of those tenants. So that way the cookies are persistent in each one of those browsers. So nice little workaround to work around what I call login hell. Because if you just try to only use one browser and you work across multiple tenancies, it becomes very complex. But if you just have one tenancy that you're working with at your own company, you really won't have that problem because you'll just create developer side collections and you'll work that way. But if you're like me and you bounce around to lots of different tenancies, then you're probably going to want to look to use multiple browsers. So I have a tenant. I'm going to walk you through how you actually create a developer site collection. It's actually pretty easy. Da-da-da-da. Come on. Maybe it's Firefox problem. Nah, there it is. Another problem is remembering all of these passwords, but... No, that's my Microsoft account. I want to be Steve in this tenant. And if anybody knows how we can solve the login magic, let me know. All right. So this is a tenant that I've actually been using to do demos with. If I go into my site collection administration in SharePoint, so if I go admin, SharePoint, this is going to take me to the tenant administrator screen for SharePoint. Okay. This is how you create site collections. So if you've got developers in your organization and you want to let them do development against a site collection, developer sites, then you would go in here and you would create these. You can tell that I've created quite a few. I've delivered quite a lot of this training over the last few months. And I'm going to say new, private site collection. Hey, I got my text message, but it's too late. I'm going to call this Moscow Dev. I'm going to turn that guy down. I'm going to create it. I'm going to call it Moscow Dev. There. I can choose a language for the site collection. And you'll notice I have a few different templates available to me. I want to choose developer site. Now, you may say, I want to develop against another type of site. So maybe I want to do development using the app model against a publishing site. You have a couple of different options there. I'm going to click Create, and then I'm going to explain this. I can choose what time zone. Since we're in Moscow, let's go down and find the one for Moscow. Right here. The administrator is going to be Steve. Let's resolve that. Yep, I'm going to give it a gig, and I'm going to say OK. And then it should go and it should start initiating the creation of my developer site. And it says it is being created. It will take 15 minutes or longer to complete this task. Sometimes it finishes faster, but you have to assume that it might take a while. While that's going, what the developer site collection actually does is it allows you to automatically deploy apps to the site collection. You don't have to do any configuration. So you can get the URL to this developer site. You can go into Visual Studio. You create your project. You just put in the URL to your developer site. You're off and running. You can deploy apps to it very quickly and easy. If I go create just an out-of-the-box team site, or if I create an out-of-the-box publishing site, and then I try to deploy an app to that outside of the corporate catalog flow or outside of the office marketplace flow, it is going to throw exceptions because the capabilities that you need to actually load the app into the site and bypass all of the store process or the app catalog process are not activated. There are times where you may want to do that. The publishing site example is actually a good one because activating all the publishing features on a developer site is kind of onerous sometimes. If you are interested in or need to do that, there's a process we call side loading. You need to enable side loading in that site collection. So the easiest way to do it is to use a developer site, but there's some edge cases where you might want to develop against different kinds of site collections. Then what you need to do is you need to enable side loading on the tenant, and then you need to enable it on the site collection, and then you would be able to deploy apps to it. The reason we don't turn that on by default is
security.
That's exactly right. Because if I can develop an app and I can deploy it into that site, and then I get Israel to come navigate to my site, I can act on behalf of Israel without any kind of IT governance or control over that. So if you are going to enable, and I use Israel as my example, not because I like to, you know, pick on him or anything, but he's just sitting here. If you do need to enable side loading on site collections, be careful with it and make sure that you understand you're giving that developer a lot of trust in your organization, okay? So typically the way that I do it is I make them develop in a separate tenant from my corporate tenant and turn the side loading on in a different tenant. So you may think we're a little too security conscious, but we want to err to the side of being secure. So there's blog posts out there about how to turn on side loading and all that kind of stuff. So read them. It's got all the caveats. I actually wrote the one that's on dev.office.com. So let's see if this thing's finished yet. And it's not. Let's refresh. And this is an asynchronous background process, so Sometimes it takes a little time. Yep, it's still provisioning. I'm going to go ahead and just pop one up just so you can see what it looks like. One that I used in Miami last month. So when you look at a developer site collection, you actually get this nice little apps in testing section. And this is all the different apps that I've deployed into this site collection. I can go in, I can view the logs. So if I've ran an upgrade of this app or I've installed this app, I can actually view the logs. I can manage the permissions for the app, and I can manually remove it. So those options aren't available by default on normal site collections. This is something special that we do. We kind of think of it as a little mini catalog within that developer site collection. Okay. All right. So from here, so again, just to reinforce, the developer site collection is required for remote app development. With that, with all the caveats that I said about side loading, if you need to do it in other cases, it's created automatically if you sign up for a developer tenant. So if I just use my MSDN subscription, go grab a developer tenant, it creates me a dev site collection by default. But I can go in and I can create other ones as needed. So maybe I have 10 people doing development here. I'm probably going to want them each to have their own developer site collection, and then I'll do dev integration at some other point somewhere. That keeps them from stomping on each other's toes. And then, like I showed you, you can use the developer site template to create a new one in an existing tenancy. So the app catalog, that is required to publish apps. You have to create it in the SharePoint Admin Center. It's not there by default. That's in apps app catalog, and I'm actually going to show you that real quick. Wait, we'll go back to my browser here. If I go back into SharePoint Admin, you'll notice in the tenant administrator, I've got an apps section over here. And I go into app catalog. I can create a new app catalog site. An app catalog site is a special kind of site. You have, you know, if you're going to deploy apps into an app catalog centrally, then you'll need to go create one. Or you can enter a URL for an existing app catalog site. I'll walk through what it looks like to create one. I say OK. I give it a title. I'm going to call it my app catalog. Let's put it at app catalog English. We'll leave that the same. Steve's the administrator. It's like a pared down. It's a lot of the same information that we needed to create a normal site collection, but it doesn't ask me the template because it knows I'm trying to create an app catalog. Because it's just a SharePoint site collection, it does have the same caveats around needing to manage the storage quota. So if you're going to have, you know, 10 gigabytes worth of apps, you need to make sure you got 10 gigabytes worth of storage in the site collection. I doubt you ever have 10 gigabytes worth of apps, because what gets deployed here is actually just a manifest and some XML that tells it what kind of app it is. And you can see that it's actually creating. Once that's created, then I could deploy apps into the corporate catalog and make them available across all of my site collections if I so choose to do so. And I'm going to just let that spin for a minute. We'll come back to that. Visual Studio 2013, we actually have a 90-day trial, so if you want to just go download the trial and install it, kick the tires for a little while without having to commit to purchase the thing, you can do that. I've got a link there. And then if you're going to do Office 365 development, you're going to want the Office 365 API tools. You can see those in the list of available controls. That's not a separate download. It actually uses NuGet to actually go pull the packages down and put them in Visual Studio. So that's actually kind of cool. So I actually showed you the developer subscription one already. So the Windows Azure environment. So let's say I have Windows Azure, or I have Microsoft Office 365, and now I want to add Azure to it. I'm going to navigate. So once I'm logged in, so I have an Office 365 developer tenant, or I have my E3 tenant, I'm going to navigate to the Azure portal. So portal.azure.com, I think, is the right URL. When prompted, you will sign up for a trial. Okay? It's important to that first bullet. It's a lot easier if you log in using one of the Office 365 credentials for the tenant you've already created, because it's naturally going to go ahead and associate the Azure Active Directory from your Office 365 account to the Azure tenant. If you are not logged in as to those credentials, then you have to do some extra steps to wire those two things up. It's possible, but it's some extra steps. So if I want to, so this is what I'm saying. If the easiest way is just log in as, you know, the admin at my tenant, navigate to portal.azure.com in the same browser session. It's going to still remember that that's who you are, and you're going to sign up for the trial. So that's the easiest way. If you've already got an Office 365 subscription and you've already got an Azure subscription and you want to link the two together, you can also do that as well. You can log into the Azure subscription as an administrator for the Azure subscription. You click on the Active Directory link. You click New, Active Directory, Directory, Custom Create. You select Add an Existing Directory. And that's a little counterintuitive, because it sounds like you're creating a directory, but you're actually creating the directory reference, and you're going to add an existing one. And then you just follow the steps to add an existing directory. It'll ask you what the directory is. It'll ask you some basic information. And then you can tie those two together. So if you already have an Azure subscription and you already have an Office 365 account, you can tie those two things together. If you want to make an Office 365 account an Azure admin, so let's say you have admin at your Azure subscription, and then you have admin at Office 365, and you don't want to have to log in and log out all the time. You'd rather just use one administrator credential for both. You can do that as well. So you log into the Azure subscription as an existing administrator. You go to the settings link. You click on administrators, add, and then you add the organizational account from Office 365. So you can mix and match between the directories, between the subscriptions. You just have to go in and define that that person from my Office 365 directory can also manage this Azure subscription. So if you get that weird error where it think, you know you have an Azure subscription and you're logged in as an admin from Office 365, but when you navigate to Azure, it says you don't have a subscription, you need to sign up. This is probably what you need to do, is go log into the existing Azure subscription and add the O365 admin as an admin into the Azure subscription. So I've stumbled over that one myself multiple times. So I'm going to try to show you what obtaining a Windows Azure trial subscription looks like. Let me do that real quick. Let's see, 207, we're going 245. This one goes pretty fast, so we'll have lots of time for Q&A. So I'm actually just going to do it from here. Wait, let's see if this other one finished. Sorry, because this way it's in Russia. I had problems last night. I had a U.S. So this is 154. I had a U.S. Office 365 account and tried to create a Russian. Let's try it one more time. Text me. Come on.
What is the timeout for the?
I don't know exactly, but if you leave it set for long enough, it may, yeah, it may time out. But I got another one. What's that?
I mean, until you get the message into your phone.
Right. Let's see. I think what it was is I waited too long from the time I got my message on my phone. But anyway, it worked when I said resend the code and just did it immediately. So it did work. So this is one I created, moscowsummit.onmicrosoft.com. I'm ready to go. So if I click that, it's going to send me back to the portal. You can see that I am logged in as Steve at moscowsummit.onmicrosoft.com. So I'm logged in as the administrator for that tenant that I just created. Okay. So then what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to navigate now to And you'll notice down here, it's still setting up all of these services. That sometimes takes a while for it to provision all those things after you've provisioned an Office 365 account. But just give it time. It will end up setting those up. But now in the same browser session, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to navigate to portal.azure.com. It still knows that I'm Steve at. It says, hey, let's get started. It says I'm starting up. You can see that it knows that I'm Steve at Moscow Summit. Okay. When I click the Azure portal here, it's not going to find a subscription. It says, wait a minute, you don't have an Azure subscription. So I'm going to sign up for Windows Azure. Da-da-da-da. And it wants to know my name, wants to know a contact email. This is actually kind of important because if you ever administrative emails like, hey, you got locked out of your account, stuff like that, it's going to send them to this alternate email account. I'm from Microsoft. I'm going to do 918-430-4567. Oh, that may be weird because let's give this a go. See, this is what it did to me last night because I'm trying to use a phone number and no, this is because it's a U.S. phone number and I'm trying to do a Russian subscription. Anybody got a Russian phone number they want to put in here? No? Yeah? You want to put yours in? Come up. Come on. Let's do this. Put your phone number in there. Yeah? Oh, come on. Let me refresh this. Hold on. I may need you to do it again. I promise I won't hijack your stuff. All right. There you go. All right, I think you got to put it in again. So 926 739 3998. All right. And now I'm going to send him a text message. Ah, see, that one worked. So I guess for some reason we have some security measure that says.
There's a definite reason because they do not want to pay.
Do not want to pay?
No, this service doesn't want to pay.
Ah, I see. For sending the text out. That may be it. 182-200. There's a lot of things Microsoft does, but not willing to pay is not one of them usually. So, just saying. We've spent a lot of money on... Ah! This is just not going well today. Well, I have not seen that particular exception.
Are you already trying this in IE?
I am trying it in IE. Maybe I should go try it in another browser, huh? Well, let's give that a go. Heck, I've got time. So I'm going to log out of this one. I'm going to clear my cookies. We're going to do it one more time. And see if the other browser works. So this was moscowsummit.sharepoint.com. It's going to ask me to log in. Steve at moscowsummit at onmicrosoft.com. That's a dot, not an at. Sign in. Okay, so now I'm signed in. Let's navigate over to the Azure portal, portal.azure.com. And yes, I know you went to the Azure portal, but you have to click Azure portal. No subscription, so let's sign up. May need your phone again. Hold on a second. We might get lucky here. Fingers crossed. Oh, now it's not asking for verification. It just wants payment information. That doesn't look right. This is what it did to me last night, remember? Yeah. Probably not a good idea to show you my credit card number. So I am. And since this is being recorded, I'm sure my manager would not want to approve all the expenses that would pop up from this. Let's try this out. 0171008. Yes, it does want, when you sign up for a trial, it does ask for a credit card. If you do not extend the trial, you do not exceed the limits of the trial. If you just let it expire, it's never going to charge you anything on your credit card. But this makes it easy to convert this to a paid subscription later. So 6, 2016. And it wants a Russian credit card. Never mind. Unless you got one of those too. Be racking up some compute charges on that. All right. Okay, so that's what it looks like. Sorry. The regional differences and the fact that I do not have a Russian Amex have conspired against us. But believe me, it does work if you live here. All right, so let's talk about seller dashboard. So if I actually want to submit apps to the Microsoft Marketplace, this could be apps for SharePoint, apps for Office, Windows 8.1 apps, or the Azure Marketplace. So we do actually have an Azure Marketplace now for Azure-based apps. You can register as a company or as an individual. So again, this is something where if you're an ISV or you want to publish an app to one of our marketplaces, you're going to need one of these accounts. All right? So the sign-up process for that is you have to have a Microsoft account if you do not have one. And when we say Microsoft account, we mean the account you would use to log into Windows 8, Live ID, Outlook.com ID. We've used a few other suffixes, but those are all called Microsoft accounts now. Not very confusing, but unless you work for Microsoft, that's very confusing for us because they say, which Microsoft account, my personal one or the one for work? Most of you don't have that problem. So you sign in to the seller dashboard with your Microsoft account. You fill in the registration information and you submit it for approval. That's it. I can show you what that looks like by actually doing this. You get to go.microsoft.com. I believe I've done this with my Microsoft account before, but come on. Or not. Come on, it's not, the demo gods are not good for me today.
Do it across Safari browser.
I got it now. You just go to another browser. Don't use IE, I guess. Sorry. So if I sign into that. Then it wants to do what? Oh, text me or email me. Verify it's your phone number, the last four digits, and then send code. Send code. B Because we want to make sure you're not a robot. That's basically what this is, because there are crafty people who would write automation to actually go spin up a bunch of trial subscriptions and eat our compute up and then throw it away and sign up for more. This is our way of kind of keeping that from happening. You at least have to be able to receive a text message and enter it back in. So I'm going to put it in, 953-5859. And I frequently sign in on this device. The code did not work. Well, I really think it's the cross-region thing, though. Let me try it one more time. 953-5895. I must have mistyped it. So it says if you're tired of waiting for these security codes, you can do this process. I'll set that up later because I actually enjoy typing these things in. And then you'll be dumped in here. It'll ask you for some information. You can tell that I need to go in and update my account, but it's that easy. Looks like I have some changes I need to do, but that's pretty much it. Once you do that, then you can add new apps, right? I can choose what kind of app I want. I can upload it to the store to start the approval process, so on and so forth. So, hey, at least we don't collect the credit card on that one beforehand. We wait until afterwards, and then you have to set up your developer account. And actually, it was $99 a year, I think. Is that the developer? Yeah, it's $99 US a year.
If you have MSDN, it's free.
Yep, but if you have MSDN, it's free. So another MSDN benefit. All right, so what's the publishing process look like? You actually go build your app. You upload the app to the Seller Dashboard account, which I showed you. You can just click in there and say, upload my app. You submit it for approval. And then once it's approved, you will see the app in the marketplace. You can also track app usage and receive payout there. So when people have bought your app, we'll accrue that there. You can get your payouts from that portal. I do want to stop a minute and talk about the approval process. We do actually look at these apps. We make sure that they render in different browsers. There's a set of rules that we use. We make sure that you're not granting or asking for too much permission, like full tenant access or anything like that. So if you're doing any of those things that kind of violate our marketplace rules, then your app will be rejected, but then we'll tell you why it was rejected when that happens, okay? So as a wrap-up, I feel horrible that my demos didn't actually work, but you saw the screens, you saw what the process looks like, and now you know how to go get an Office 365 environment, you know how to get a Windows Azure environment, and you know what the Seller Dashboard looks like. So with that, I'm going to open it up to Q&A. We've got quite a lot of time left here, another 15 minutes or so. So happy to answer questions if folks have them. Don't be shy.
I have a question.
All right, what you got?
I have an issue yesterday. I want to build WSP package without server-side code, just with files, with JavaScript. And I need to spin up full virtual machine with SharePoint to build just one VSP without code.
Right.
Is there any good ways to solve this issue? I found a couple hacks. I made hacks, and it works, but it's hacks.
Yeah.
There's no official way to build WSP without code, so just...
Without having SharePoint installed on your machine.
Without having SharePoint.
Right. So the question was, I want to build a sandbox solution WSP, right?
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's Sandbox because you're wanting to deploy it to the cloud. That is a notable deficit to our story right now. That is one of those cases where you will still need SharePoint installed on the local machine to do development. There are a couple of hacks out there. I can't guarantee you that we won't break those hacks at some point, but they do still work if they're the ones I'm thinking of. One thing, though, if you want to think about it, why are you using the sandbox? So you want to deploy some files, like you said. If you create an app for SharePoint, you can actually deploy files, and it behind the scenes will create a WSP to do that. So I question, maybe you don't need the sandbox solution, depending on what you're trying to do, right? So that's one of the things. We still use that WSP infrastructure behind the scenes, even in our apps. So if I go in and create a new app for SharePoint, and I say I want to deploy files, then it will actually create a small WSP package that's actually part of your app package. I want to be careful, and it's okay to still use those declarative methods, but if you're, do not resort to using the user code service if you can keep away from it. That's kind of our old traditional model. So, but if you're just deploying files and stuff, I'd be interested why you were looking to build your own WSP versus using the apps for
customizing forms.
So you're deploying new list views and things of that nature?
Forms.
Which is outside of what we can do with the apps for SharePoint. Got it. Now, yeah, I don't have an easy story for you. You're still going to need that laptop like that.
don't think.
Yeah. The other alternative is I've seen a lot of organizations that'll just spin up a virtual machine and let developers log into that when they need to go do that type of development rather than having to do it on their own local laptops. And so as you move forward in time, maybe you don't need to do that as often and you can just use virtual machines for that. But yeah, I don't have a workaround. And I know of no engineering plan at this point to add support to do sandbox development without having SharePoint installed locally, because it does need to use the DLLs. We would actually have to distribute a whole bunch of DLLs out of band is basically what would happen. So the hacks you found are go copy all those DLLs out of the hive and put them on your machine. And yeah.
Yeah. SharePoint installed.
Yeah.
Visual Studio, trust me, it's not installed.
Yeah, and it's actually not a technical blocker there. We're a big company. That's more one of those EULA, like licensing agreement blockers. We can't distribute those without the full install. So we have to be able to pop you up that little thing that says, I agree that I'm going to abide by the rules and not do nasty things and say okay. And so we would have to find another way to do that. So, all right, any other questions? All right. Well, I'll be up here if anybody wants to come up afterwards and converse about this topic. But other than that, we'll let you guys get a few extra minutes, get 15 extra minutes to go have a cup of coffee and wake up after this lunch session.